Last Word on Today FM.
Okay, some of your comments coming in about Manchester United. I've been to Old Trafford multiple times over the last three decades. It is in disrepair and needs to be rebuilt. A new stadium is very welcome, but no doubt very expensive, and I dread to see the prices of tickets when complete, and hopefully they'll be playing an awful lot better. Another one says, the new Manchester United stadium plans are hysterical. They don't have a pot to piss in, and now they're building a £2.4 billion stadium. I'm a United fan. It's mortifying. Miguel Delaney, chief football writer with The Independent. Explain what the plan is, please.
Well, I'm not sure explanation is all that easy, given, to my mind, today's announcement leaves more questions than answers. OK, there's certainty on one aspect, which is now we know they want to actually construct a new stadium beside the old Trafford, and for the great old stadium to eventually be demolished. But as to everything else, not least how they're going to fund it, well, I mean, this is completely up in the air. The chief executive, Omar Barade, did kind of say, we're a PLC, so we can't go into detail, but then described it as what he felt as an interesting investment, an attractive investment opportunity. I thought Jim Ratcliffe had maybe a conspicuous line about how the timescale might depend on government plans on regeneration of the area, because I suppose what a lot of people are asking now is how much public money is going to go into this. But even all this is striking. I mean, just the juxtaposition of, on Monday, we have headlines from Ratcliffe's round of interviews where he's talking about how the club was on the path to going bust had he not made changes on Monday, this season. And then, not even a week later, the very next morning, they're announcing what is supposed to be the most ostentatious stadium plan in British history. And that's only kind of the major details of the funding. There's all sorts of other questions about kind of the match day experience, the, you know, other elements of the stadium. But yeah, that's more of the details.
And there's all sorts of issues arise out of this, because, I mean, would they be able to fill a 100,000-seater stadium in 5 years if they haven't won a league title in that time, if the popularity of the club isn't as it has been in recent years? If they're funding this stadium, how would they invest in the playing staff to win trophies over the next 5 years, and indeed for a number of years beyond, given what we've seen the experiences of other clubs when they've built big new stadiums?
Yeah, on the popularity point, I actually have to say I don't think that's such an issue, just because United, I mean, both like people in finance see this, and I think it's obviously true from just walking out onto the street almost. They're one of, I think, what people consider about 14 clubs who have this global profile. And no matter what happens, that stays fairly consistent. And also, as we've seen from Liverpool, having gone 30 years without a league title, there is always that bedrock, first of all, a bedrock of support, and B, when you become successful again, things accelerate quite quickly.
Yeah, but sorry, Liverpool had big Champions League campaigns, including victories during that time when they didn't win an English title.
That's true. I mean, and obviously that's a huge international moment, but given the kind of the global popularity of the Premier League now, and United, like say, beating City in the FA Cup last year, I'm not saying that's the equivalent of the Champions League. It's more kind of a moment of prominence and glory and all that. So I don't think the kind of capacity is such an issue. As to what happens in the meantime, this is the big one. But this is, I mean, we're already talking about the potential cost of how it's financed. And I think you're right to mention, say, the difficulty that Arsenal went through for 5 years after their stadium had been built or completed in 2006. The current difficulties that Spurs are facing, given amid Ange Postecoglou's difficulties, a lot of people have been pointing to say how their player wage turnover ratio is so low. But there's a distinction there. With those stadiums, this is after the fact, we know how they're funded. With United, I mean, we can't even say that at the moment. And it's why, you know, I've had people onto me today saying, well, I mean, how much of this was almost a pitch for investments as much as an actual announcement? And then what are the comments like yesterday about, you know, about how were they actually that close to going bust? I mean, from speaking to well-placed people in finance today, they think that's a bit wide of the mark. While they clearly have massive issues, we are talking about a club that's usually profitable. It's but then, I mean, and at the core of all this as well, ultimately, we are talking about someone who is a billionaire who can put in more than the money he used to buy a stake in the club, and also, to be fair, the 80 million he put in.
Okay. Yeah, okay, but I just want to hear a little bit of Jim Ratcliffe. Jim Ratcliffe is in his early 70s. He made his petrochemical fortune, a company called Ineos. He's at one stage estimated to be worth about 20 billion quid. But here's him explaining yesterday the financial difficulties that United have been experiencing this year.
We increased the cost by £100 million in the last, 7 years since 16. And the player salary bill increased by £100 million. So that went from 150 to 250. This went from 170 to 270. And in that period of time, the top line, the revenue, increased by only £100 million.
£370 million.
So you just finish up with a situation which is untenable. It doesn't work. If you spend, if every year you spend more money than you earn, ultimately that's the road to ruin. And unfortunately, and it is not until we mentioned it a couple of times today, is not known, Manchester United would have run out of money at the end of this year. Christmas this, November this year, the club runs out of cash.
Do you realise how...
That's sort of quite a big...
But do you realise how bad that is to hear? I know that's a fact, by the way, because over the last two or three years, I think the fans who obviously got an interest in the business side of the club have been tracking the club's desperate situation, the mismanagement over the last 10 years. This is the richest football club in the world when it comes to revenue.
Yeah.
But because of...
Top three
in the world.
Yeah.
And it's having to cut £40,000 from ex-players and now removing food from members of staff in the canteen.
I mean, but the alternative isn't very tenable, is it? Which is the club goes bust at Christmas.
Miguel, I suspect they could have refinanced. They wouldn't have gone bust. He's exaggerating a little bit. But is that going to actually provide a platform in which to attract banking finance and other finance for the construction of a new stadium?
Well, look, at the very least, I suppose, headlines like that, comments like that, suddenly make, or for a lot of people, it will make very unpalatable decisions suddenly feel a little bit more explainable. So I think that's one side to that. As regards kind of, I mean, I suppose you would kind of divorce maybe some of those comments to the attractiveness of this. But again, it's about what route they choose. And it's why, like, I mean, it was so low on detail in that sense. Okay, we had a lot of detail about how the architecture reflects the kind of the devil's trident and the crest and all this. But it's just beyond those bare statements.
I mean, okay.
It's why it's very difficult to actually discuss the finance.
One final
options.
I had John O'Shea on the programme yesterday, and one of the things I put to him was, could Manchester United lose that sense of identity with Ireland as this continues? I know that Premier League has changed and it's all about the best players from all over the world, but since it was Roy Keane and John O'Shea, I'm struggling to remember any Irish player for Manchester United. And when you consider going back as far as Liam Whelan and the Busby Babes and all of the Irish players over the years, do you think Irish fans continue to be so loyal to Manchester United if they have no Irish players and if they're not winning titles?
I think there's an important thing there, and especially because it's not just about a lineage of Irish players at the club. It's actually a lineage of Ireland's greatest players, going right back to the 1930s. Carey, Whelan, Giles, Brennan, on through the players of the 70s, okay, not quite to the level of some of the stars we have, but then at the Paul McGrath, Roy Keane, and up finishing up, I suppose, with O'Shea, and then Darren Gibson, who wouldn't be at that level, but we are talking about kind of someone, you know, at a club of Manchester United stature at that point. It's actually a sadness that this happens. Now, I suppose you could say this is a reflection of our own wider football trajectory rather than necessarily having to do with Manchester United. And also, the Premier League is now, it's really a de facto global Super League. And Manchester United are just, they're not really the same club in terms of kind of geographical positioning that they were for most of those decades.
Okay, I'm going to have to leave it there. Miguel Delaney, and our listeners giving out to me for forgetting Johnny Evans, of course, from Northern Ireland, who is still at Manchester United. But I think I could be forgiven for forgetting Darren Gibson. Thank you, Miguel Delaney, chief football writer of The Independent.
The Last Word on Today FM.